So welcome, everyone, to the Ridley Planning Commission special meeting for Thursday, November 30th, 2017. So let's go ahead and do the Pledge of Allegiance. So please stand.
Ready, salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, Ellen, can we do a attendance roll call?
Commissioner Barcelos.
Here.
Commissioner Bissett.
Here.
Commissioner Hudson.
Here.
Commissioner Perez.
Here.
Chairman Custodio.
Here. Now we're in the portion of the agenda, public comment. This provides an opportunity for the members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public with the Commission's jurisdiction and which are not already on this agenda this evening. And just so we can note for the record, there's no one in the audience, so we're going to go ahead and move on. And this brings us to agenda number one, and this is why we're here, special meeting, the workshop for the Planning Commission. And I'm just going to go ahead and give it to staff.
Thank you very much, Chairman. All right. We wanted to... Do you have the clicker by chance, Ellen?
Click, click.
We wanted to just have a real quick, what I think we'll likely call an annual training or an annual workshop. More than anything, to give everybody, I guess I would refer to it as like the spring training. I grew up playing sports, right, baseball in particular. And every single year we would start with a spring training, regardless of how long we'd been playing baseball. And I mean, they do that even into the major leagues, right? So to me, it's one of those items that every single year, it's a really good idea just to go back and recenter one more time about what do we do? Why are we here? Have there been any changes over the last year? Is there anything coming up that we should be aware of? Ellen and I both thought that it would be particularly good to have this right now because following the closure of the lawsuit, as you guys have already started to see, there's been more activity and there's much more in the pipeline coming down. So we wanted just to be able to have a come back to the starting line type of look at everything and be able to address any questions that there might be about past, present, or future and just touch on the subject line as we go from there. So cover some little basics about what planning commissions are, all that fun type of stuff. I want this to be really informal, so if you have any questions at any time, please feel free to interrupt. If you think there's something on there that doesn't look right or is confusing, by all means, stop me and say, hey, can we discuss that a little bit? I'd be happy to do it. So first, under the training tools and resources, we're going to have a quick intro, discuss the history of planning. We're going to talk about the tools that we typically will utilize in planning and in the Planning Commission with zoning, general plans, and specific plans. And then we're going to talk a bit about what the Planning Commission's role is and how that works, how why we have meetings, what they should look like, how they can be most effective, and resources. We're going to talk about some examples and some guidance that you guys can continually utilize if you would like to, some good places to get some good training, some good answers if you're interested. Then from there, I'm going to give a really quick legislative update. We'll touch just a teeny bit on CEQA and some changes that are on tap for California policies. You guys have already started to see some of them in the text amendments that have been coming forward, but we expect a lot more in 2018. So, all right, so to get started, land use regulation. Land use regulation itself, in the United States, in the 1850s, really all you saw was anything that had to do with public nuisance principles. And these were principles that had to do with land use and development, but they were really based on common law. And they really didn't deal with anything unless it was something that was noxious or offensive to the neighbors. So you would typically hear things that had to do with noise or sometimes pollution. Those were the most common type of issues that were really dealt with in land use regulation. It was really in its infancy at that time. So in the early 1900s, you then had zoning that was introduced. The very first city, of course, to introduce zoning was New York City, which adopted theirs in 1916. Shortly thereafter, you had San Francisco came into their zoning as well. New York's had to do, at the time, more with property value, which was an interesting way to look at it, that in the early 1900s, they were already interested in it from that aspect. San Francisco's had to do much more with safety and design. Right, so California, from a very, very early stage in planning, has been at the forefront of how they want things to be designed and environmentally conscious about how they're doing it. So I think that that's interesting, and California continues that too today. Between the 1900s and the 1950s, there was relatively little overall action when it came to the issue of zoning and overall land use regulation. But then in the 1950s, you had this very large building boom, and that's when the topics of things like sprawl and whatnot first started to really take form for people, and there was much more discussion about regulating land use and how do things look and how are they building and where do we want them to build and what's the appropriate scale, and all of that fun stuff started to come in. Then the 1960s through today, that's when we've really started to see what we term the modern regulatory controls and the expansion of those controls. So in the early 1970s, California required comprehensive planning. That's where your general plan comes into play, that every community is required to have a general plan. Environmental stewardship became something very, very important across the United States, even though your coastal areas latched onto it much, much quicker than any of the inland areas of the United States did. And California has really been at the forefront of the environmental movement since its beginning. You have your different levels of planning that started to be established. You, of course, had your local, which is what we do here. You had your regional, which is like the Fresno Council of Governments, the Madera County Transportation Commission. You have your statewide, all of your Department of Finance, Department of Transportation, all of those, and then, of course, all of your federal levels as well. And there started to be a lot more conversation about who has responsibility and stewardship over what. And that's an argument that, in all honesty, still continues today. One of the reasons why zoning and planning is so important is because it is one of the items that the local agencies have been very successful at retaining the power for. So that local land use authority remains with the local agencies. It has not gone to a regional, to a state level, or to a federal level at this point. We've all seen other examples throughout the world of where that happens at different levels. I would argue that, you know, part of what makes America so great is the fact that there is so much more of that local control and that local buy-in, the people that really are invested in their individual communities. What came along with, of course, all of the items that we just talked about was the fact that regulations simply increase, and that's another item that continues throughout today. So zoning, what exactly is zoning? In its broadest term, it's used to regulate land use and development, and it's really intended to implement your general plan. That's why we care about zoning and what it does. You have your general plan, which is your larger vision, and the zoning drills it down a little bit further and allows you to implement that. It is placed to provide for the safety and the protection of the community, but a very, very important part that we want to make sure that people always understand there is that it needs to ensure that it still provides that property right. So you're providing regulations that protect the health and the safety and hopefully the comfort of your community while making sure that you're doing that for neighbor after neighbor after neighbor without removing the controls that they have and the right that they should have to be able to utilize their own private property. Then we have our general plan. This really serves as a constitution for planning and development. It's your long-range plan. It's your overall vision. So you want to be able to know and utilize that as your compass, as your guide for what you're doing. This is why in every Planning Commission report that you will get from us, it will always have discussions about what it's zoned for, what its general plan designation is, and whether or not the proposed use is appropriate and is in line with what those designations are. And if there needs to be an adjustment, there needs to be a very specific reason why that adjustment is or is not appropriate. And those are the type of items that staff is responsible for delivering to you guys. The general plan is mandated by law that it has to contain at least 7 elements, and it covers land use, transportation, housing, conservation, noise, open space, and safety. You can have more, but those are the minimum that have to be required by the state for them to be able to certify your general plan. Then we have the specific plan, and do any of you guys remember the Reedley specific plan? Any of you familiar with that before the last general plan update? So Reedley had a specific plan that dealt with the fringe areas of the city, and when the general plan update was completed in 2014, the specific plan was rolled into the general plan, so it's now part of it. But it is not uncommon for a community to become interested in a specific area and to do a specific plan or even a master plan for that. Yeah. and just kind of drill down a little bit deeper. They'll typically contain architectural or design-oriented type of specifics that they want to see, and it'll take your zoning and add another item onto it, add a little bit more detail into it. All right, so the Planning Commission. What is the Planning Commission's role? This is really the meat of what we wanted to be able to talk to you guys about tonight. So first and foremost, you're established to serve as a nonpartisan city body to assist with the implementation of the general plan. When I had first come on here and at my first meeting, I expressed to you guys how much respect I have for planning commissions and for planning commissioners and what you do. The fact is that without a planning commission, planning staff does not have the ability to interface directly with the citizens to the degree that we need to make sure that we're making good planning decisions and that we have good planning policy in place. So you guys serve as that nonpartisan voice of the citizens for us. And you should be asking staff the tough questions and following up with some of the items that you guys have concerns about or that any of your constituents may have concerns about so that we can address those items in the open and public forum and make sure that the items that are coming into the community are the things that the community wants to see. You're, of course, appointed by the City Council. The Planning Commission is not a policy-making body, but you are charged with making policy recommendations, and I think that that's very, very important because the City Council does give great weight to the recommendations that come forward from the Planning Commission. They have a lot of confidence in the Planning Commission, and a lot of responsibility goes along with being a Planning Commissioner. So they give that great weight. You work with staff to further strengthen the planning process, which is what I had just touched on. The goal is for us to focus on the planning-related details of the project. And so you'll notice on many of the items that we bring to you that could go outside of planning into, say, sociological or something of that nature. And we always try to make sure that we're steering it back the best that we can to be consistent with the planning-related details of that project. Is it consistent with the general plan? Is it consistent with the zoning code? Are there items in the municipal code that are at odds with what this proposed project is or is trying to do? Responsibilities of the Planning Commission. We conduct public hearings, first and foremost, to review, recommend, and or approve development proposals. This can be anything including conditional uses, amendments, variances, tentative maps, and I put exceptions may apply because sometimes you'll be the approval body for those items, and then depending on what the project might entail, and as you know, every project is different, sometimes you become the recommendational body, and the City Council will actually take the final action on those items. You're charged with determining consistency with the general plan, the zoning, the municipal code, and specific plans all as appropriate. As I stated, Reedley doesn't have any specific plans right now, but that doesn't mean that we couldn't have some more in the future, and if we did, then we would report to you in our Planning Commission reports just the same way that we do. Is it consistent with the general plan? Is it consistent with zoning? Is it consistent with the specific plan if one is applicable? It's very important, obviously, because those items that you're referencing, for you guys to have good comfort and knowledge about the general plan, the housing element, and our zoning code, so Title 10 within the municipal code. What we want for you to do is to review the proposals and to ask questions to ensure that there's clarity. If you have questions or concerns about anything that's on there, us as staff need to be able to answer those questions for you as the Planning Commission and really the representative for the community. And then understand the basics of the wonderful world of CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. So that can be a master's degree all of its own. We'll touch a little bit on that later. Again, I won't go heavy into the CEQA type of stuff because that's really supposed to be staff's job to take care of that type of stuff, but we want to know that if you ever have questions or concerns about the CEQA process and how it's working and whatnot, immediately bring those up to us. And then the last thing there, of course, is to understand the Brown Act. The Brown Act all has to do with your open and your public meetings. So Ellen's going to hand out a couple items that are going to touch on some of those that we just talked about. The first one that we are going to hand out here is called the planning. Actually, before we do that one, can you pull up that PDF? Let's see if I can skip through these pages. So there's a handout I'm going to give you called the Planning Commissioner's Role, which is like a summarized version of what the Planning Commission does and a lot of their responsibilities. There is another book that is called the Planning Commissioner's Handbook. And I wanted to just pull it up so you guys can see. I mean, it just
goes and goes.
It is 215 pages, I think, on this PDF. And it answers every ridiculous question I think that you might ever have. The reason why I wanted to show this as an example is because what this shows to me is what you guys do is really, really complex as a planning commission. The things that you're going to hear about are very complex, and every project is a little different. Everyone's going to have its own little nuance. Sometimes they're really easy to understand. Sometimes they're not so easy to understand. Our job as staff is to take a system of complexities like this and to break it up into easily digestible bites for you guys. Supposed to be done in a clear and a concise manner so that you guys don't have to be experts on any of these items, but that staff can make it clear enough about this is what's being proposed, these are the pros, the cons, the challenges, and that you guys will feel very comfortable to say these are the questions that I have and be able to answer, ask those questions so that they can be answered by staff. So with that said, I'm not going to hand you out this ridiculous handbook, but if you want a copy, I'd be happy to get you.
Where I've never heard of it.
So a lot of these resources actually come from the League of California Cities. They mm-hmm. do a lot of stuff with planning commissioners, a lot of planning commission trainings. The American Planning Association does a decent amount of them as well, but I think that the League has some really, really good stuff, just simply because they work with all the cities in California. But again, I didn't do up copies of those for you guys. However, if you want them, I'd be happy to print them up for you guys at any time. Ellen was going to hand out, though, the smaller one right here, which is a breakout from one of the other League's items that they have. And then just the envelopes. There's nothing in the envelopes right now. That's just to take the all the fun stuff home when we're done tonight. Yeah, so section one here is the planning commissioner's role. We're not going to go through this tonight. It just touches on some of the items that I think are the most crucial for planning commissioners to feel comfortable with. It answers your basics of what is a planning commission, why do we even do planning, what are your duties, what are the ethics that go along with it, how should you be working with your fellow commissioners, how do you work with staff and consultants, and how do you make sure that you're interfacing appropriately with the governing body or the city council. And even as appropriate, what about the media when you get questions from the media about any type of projects that are going on? How's the best way to deal with that? So I think that this summary provides a really, really good overview. And if you guys want to breeze through that, it's 12 or 13 pages. So feel free to go through that. And again, like anything else, you got any questions, let us know.
Hey, Rob.
Yeah.
Real briefly. So the trainings that you speak of through the League of Cities, they're available to us, and can we access the calendar on the website and attend as we feel
Our schedule? I'll get to that one right now. They have an annual training, so they have their dates. They don't have their prices up just yet, but we will touch on that in one of the in the next coming slides. And there's also some other resources that are free and are completely remote, too, so you can just log on and watch videos, podcasts, download PDFs, a bunch of stuff. We'll touch on that one. Can you pull back up the PowerPoint, please? One slide back. That's all right. Perfect. Thank you very much. Okay, that very last one right there talks about the Brown Act. That's another item that Ellen's going to hand out. This is the biggest handout for you guys right here. And I think that everybody has binders at home, right? They're commission binders. Okay, we have these three-hole punch, so you guys can put them in there if you would like to. Not required items to be in there, but probably a good thing to have on reference. So the Brown Act, the reason why the title on that right there says open and public is because the Brown Act dictates what type of activities need to be held in the public forum, what type of activities are inappropriate to be held in a private forum, and it gives you good guidance when you have questions about where is that line. One of the items that we had recently encountered was a question from someone that had to do with our planning commission taking action when we had three people present instead of four or five. And the person called me in the days after the meeting and had said that, you know, in other agencies, if they don't have four or more, they won't act. So quorum is the rule, and quorum simply just means majority, right? So with five, if we have three or more, then we see that as appropriate for taking action. However, when we go through in one of our next few meetings, we are going to come back and put that on the agenda and talk at that time with the commission and see if that is something that the commission would want to entertain, to say we feel more comfortable with it being four or more. So not any type of formal activity that we'll be taking on that tonight in any way, but expect some dialogue about some of those items here in the coming months, because first and foremost, we always want to be responsive to the public and their concerns if they have any. We want to be able to address those appropriately. But then I also want to make sure that the commissioners feel as though they're receiving the support that they need as a commission to do their job in the appropriate ways. So,
well, this body used to be 7 and 9 members at one time.
Yep. It's not uncommon for planning commissions to shrink and swell over the years. So, and it's quorum. It is the actual rule that goes along with it, and quorum simply just means majority. So, but again, we can discuss it, and just to make sure that the commission feels that you guys are that everything is being addressed in the way that you feel it should be addressed is what that really comes down to. Okay, so for the planning commission meetings, this is where it gets fun. Have you guys ever heard of Robert's Rules of Order?
Yes.
Anybody familiar with that? Okay. So when I very first got into planning, I was at a meeting, and the chairman for that specific meeting was like a rock star. I mean, the guy just absolutely blew my mind. And so I approached him after the meeting and asked him, you know, how did you learn all of that to be that well? And he laughed, and he referred me to Robert's Rules of Order. So I, of course, looked it up, assuming that it was going to be, you know, a few pages long or something of that nature. It's a book and getting bigger and bigger all the time, it seems. But we did put together another summary of that right there that really touches on the important items for a commission the size of a planning commission and the type of things that you guys will deal with. Same thing as the planning commissioner's role that we had handed out here. It just kind of touches on things and gives some good direction. Not going to go through it piece by piece again tonight. Just one of those things that you can peruse through. The most important things there, I think, is that it talks about order, the order in how things should happen. And I'm going to touch on that a little bit right now, talk about why that's important. So meetings, any public meeting that we have, if we're using Robert's Rules of Orders as a guidepost, then we're going to have consistency. And your meetings should always be very transparent, consistent, and they should be process-driven, right? And those three words, I think, are extremely important. Transparent, obviously, so that the public can see exactly what is happening and why it's happening. We're very open with the public business that we're undertaking. Consistent in the way that anyone who has been here before knows what to expect, right? They're going to feel comfortable approaching this body because there's consistency there. And then process-driven, because that maximizes your time. We don't want to have you guys here languishing at meetings that are going much longer than you need to go, because they're not staying on topic in the way that they should be. So process driven is a very important thing to us as well. To assist with that, some of the items that we can be very conscious on are to make sure that you read the agenda titles, the introductions, and the notations. Read them in script form, just the way that they are on the actual agenda itself. The reason why that is important is because that makes sure that your actions, that your dialogue, and your process remain very, very clear. And these above formalities ensure that, one, proper documentation and recording of your items, so your minutes will reflect exactly what happened, why it happened that way. And that's going to strengthen everybody's understanding and the reference materials for the general public, for the staff and city council. It is amazing to me how many times I have to go back into minutes from the early 90s, the early 2000s on projects. There's multiple projects here, and some of them that we'll likely even be hearing about again in the months to come, that began in the 90s and in the early 2000s. And so with, you know, a 1 year, 3 year, 10 year break in some of these projects, you've got to go back to those minutes and take a look. What did the planning commission vote at that time? What did the city council vote at that time? What was the discussion? What were the concerns? Have they been addressed? Were they not addressed? Is it still outstanding a decade later? So making sure that we have items that are very process-driven and very clear, and those minutes can then reflect that, and the recordings, now that we record everything as well, that makes sure that we have very, very good reference material that is great for staff, great for the public, and great for any other body that needs to act on anything. Okay, So what are some of the traits of the effective planning commissioner? Oh, you know what? Before I totally forgot about this one, before I move on to that, we also had a small cheat sheet that Ellen's going to hand out as well. This, oh, did she? Oh, perfect. Thank you. I just wanted to touch on this one because it's some of the main items that you might go to. Your adjourn, your recess, to end the debate, to postpone something, to introduce business, to officially make a request on something, to make a motion. This can give you a cheat sheet and on what the appropriate item is. You know, should you interrupt a speaker in that type of instance? Is a second needed? Is it debatable? Is it amendable? Is there a vote needed? And if so, how does the vote apply to? Might be a good thing to kind of keep to the side if you guys ever have any questions. I know I definitely do. Okay, so the traits of an effective planning commissioner. First and foremost, have a strong knowledge of your community and to bring your special expertise to the table. I refuse to believe that any of you would be sitting here if you didn't care about your community. And each one of you has something specific that you bring to the table. And the hope for us would be that those questions that come from your specific area of knowledge, interest, or expertise, that those are the questions that you're going to bring to us so that we can try to address those items the very best that we can for you and for the general public. The things that you need to exhibit are an open mind to listen to new ideas, an ability to see both the strengths and the weaknesses of proposals. Critical thinking skills that are going to lead toward finding solutions when working with others is absolutely vital as a planning commission. Willingness to spend the time required to study the materials and to attend regularly. We're extremely blessed to have planning commissioners that obviously do that. I have been around other agencies that are not blessed with the type of commitment that we have here, so I thank you all for that. It makes a huge difference. A commitment to making the process fair and understandable to all. Again, just as I had stated the last time, one of the things that I respect the most about this commission is the fact that as we've had to have some discussions with applicants and members of the public that have had opposing views on items, that there has always been, in my feeling, there has always been an effort to be very open, upfront, and honest, and caring about everybody who's standing before you. And that's a great thing. And then it might be a little bit utopian to put, but I think really faith in the future of the community and the ability to know that the decisions that we make here at the Planning Commission can continually shape that future. So have that hope and not be afraid to act on the things that are going to keep us steered in the direction that the community wants to go and that we've identified in our plans. Okay, some of the resources. League of California Cities every year offers something called the Planning Academy. It's always done in the spring. This year it's going to be April 4th through the 16th. They have not released... I'm sorry. Thank you. Yeah, no. Woo. Boy, wow. If it's going on for 12 days. Talk about spring training. Goodness sakes. Yes, April 4th to the 6th of 2018. They have not released their prices yet, but they did give me their 2017 prices and said that they don't anticipate that there will be any big changes there. So for the full conference, which covers city planning commissioners, any city planning directors, or city staff, the cost is $575. And if you want to just do a single day registration, it's a $300 fee. I have not spoken to our city manager about it, but I do not believe that it would be a challenge to say if we had commissioners that were interested in going for us to be able to have a scholarship or two that could allow for that type of item and help assist to make that happen. I know that's been done in other agencies before, so I'm sure that there's an appropriate way that we can find to make that happen. So if you think that would be something you'd be interested in doing and those dates look like they could work for you, by all means, please let me know.
Where is this?
Yeah, where is that?
It's up in Sacramento.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, it's not like an Acapulco or you know, something like that. So.
No Vegas?
No, not Vegas this time, no.
Close to Reno, though.
That's right. Okay, the American Planning Association also offers discounted membership for planning commissioners. They have online and on-site trainings, and they have publications that are geared towards the planning commissioners' duties. They recently changed the name of the magazine. I believe it's just called Planning Commissioner Today now. But anyways, they have that item. And American Planning Association is a professional organization that supports the efforts of planners all throughout the United States. So you get a lot of good mix of content coming all the way from the East, the Midwest, and the West. And I was actually shocked with how the discounted membership is for commissioners. I mean, it's like maybe 20% of what you would pay as a professional staff member. So if that's something you guys would be interested in, I can get you dollar figures on that. I want to say $45 is what it was, but fairly insignificant. And then planetizen.com, they have hundreds of no-cost or some of them low-cost courses that detail every single aspect of planning. And when I say every single aspect, I mean all of it. It covers everything. Like if you wanted to get into interest about freight planning and how that works and coming in and out of ports and airports. And I mean, it is incredible. They cover all of that all the way down to your basic zoning and planning commission 101 and those type of items. Planetizen.com is a site that I actually use, I would say probably 3 or 4 times a month just to see, you know, what are other agencies doing with that? And how some other people address these type of items and you know, is this trending in a certain direction? Does it seem to be more discussion about this or that out there? What are the hot topics right now? But if you go to courses.planetizen.com, it'll pull up there typically about 5 or 6,000 at any one given time that you guys can thumb through. And they're searchable and all that fun stuff.
Rob, could we have a copy at the end of the day or whenever of your PowerPoint presentation?
Yep, absolutely. All right, I'm not going to get heavy into the legislative update because this right here covers all the bills that are just housing or land use related that are at the state right now, right? So 125 pages, 225 plus bills that are related, and these are just the 2017 ones. That is painful. It is a ton of stuff. And then just to show another example, each one of those bills, of course, when it comes out in its form, it'll range anywhere from, you know, 4 to 30 pages typically of these type of items. So it's a ton of stuff to track and to have to go through. You know, 130 bills were introduced related just to housing alone. And that was just in 2017. And they anticipate that 2018 is going to be even heavier on housing-related topics. Affordable housing really at the top of that, and change after change after change that the state is going through to try to improve and encourage additional affordable housing to be built throughout the state. So as it says right there, 2018 is the second year of a 2-year session, so any bill that didn't pass this year still has a chance to come back up in this next year. So us as staff, we are always doing the very best that we can to keep our finger on the pulse of what the major bills are doing, the ones that we know are going to have a big impact. And we try to make sure that our planning commission and that our city council is kept away from the majority of the white noise with the ones. But the ones that we know are getting enough traction or look like they're really going to do something, we want to make sure they're introduced to you at the right time, right? So we don't want to bombard you with information, but we also try to make sure that you get the information that you need when you need it. So that's why we're going to touch on this one a little bit, because effective January 1, there are changes in processing housing applications, and the majority of these came either under the Housing Accountability Act, SB 35, or SB 166. They're going to deal with some new and annual reporting requirements, so these will be some things that the Planning Commission will have an opportunity to hear about from staff, of course, before they're submitted to the state. The return of some rental inclusionary requirements, which had been taken away several years ago, a lot of that under the Title IX stuff. But a lot of these items that are now going to be coming back to try to add some protection for both renters and for landowners, right? And then accessory dwelling units. You guys will be seeing in the very near future, you will be seeing already us coming forth with a text amendment to address the accessory dwelling units, which the state had actually pushed through very, very quickly. And there are already some items that are in place and live right now that someone could come in with the state regulations and say, this is what I want to do. Thank goodness it's nothing that is drastically different than what we already have in our code, but there is some small cleanup language that was needed for us to be able to address that. So you guys will be seeing that in the next couple of meetings here. There are some housing element adjustments that you guys will hear about and some new housing funding sources. That seems to be one of the hottest topics of all. The state has, over the last couple of years, come up with a lot of these regulations to deal with housing, affordable housing, requirements for housing. And then, of course, all the agencies were coming back and saying, you're giving us all these requirements and stipulations. How are we supposed to pay for these items? So the state is now finally coming up with the funding sources on how they're going to do this. Some of them competitive, some of them done on just a formula pro rata basis. Obviously, we'll be bringing those items to you guys as they come forward. And like it says right there, there's a lot more to come in 2018. So Don't get tired of us on text amendments just yet, because you'll likely be seeing some more of them over the next year or two.
Can you give me an example of accessory dwelling units? What do we have those?
Yeah, so the state in there, they changed some of their terminology. Okay. Yeah. So what they did, an accessory dwelling unit now encompasses everything that used to be called a second dwelling unit, a mother-in-law apartment,
okay.
Right? It's those type of items, whether it's attached or detached. Yeah. So they put all of them together now, and everything is now called an accessory dwelling unit.
Okay.
Yeah. If you remember the conversation that we had about transitional housing, the state did the same exact thing with that term. They took every single type of emergency shelter, parolee housing, all of it, and lumped it under one term, and they call all of it transitional housing now because it's easier for them.
But does not include duplexes and stuff like that, right?
It does not. No, your standard multifamily stuff like that is still different. Yeah, there are some specific, albeit can feel like gray areas, in all honesty, but there are some specific items there that this is an accessory dwelling unit, this is not an accessory dwelling unit. The most obvious one there, of course, is going to be, is it a single-family home, right? Is your initial home a single-family home? And there are requirements, in addition to the state, that the owner has to occupy one of the units and all that fun stuff. But in the coming months, when we bring that to you, you'll get all the details on that one there.
And it already exists. It's in our current code, but they're just trying to make them easier now.
Easier.
Yep. So, with all that said, more than anything, I just want to thank each and every one of you for being here. This is it's a huge sacrifice for your time and your talents to come here. We're extremely grateful for you. Reedley is a better place because of the planning commission that they have. And so I want to thank each one of you for joining us tonight at our workshop. I didn't want to keep you very long. The hope here was that we'd be able to cover everything in about 45 minutes to an hour. So I think we've stayed fairly close to that. That concludes the presentation, and I'm happy to answer any type of questions that you guys might have.
Where would the Brown Act come into play in our setting here?
So it comes into play anytime you have a body that is making a recommendation or approving on anything. Even though we are a quasi-judicial body, anytime we have anything that can impact anybody in that nature,
okay,
you err on the side of caution.
Let me rephrase that then. The Brown Act, when it comes to closed session, would we ever go into closed session?
That's a good question. I've never experienced a closed session with the Planning Commission before.
Yeah.
I would imagine that you likely can do a closed session. It would just, of course, have to be agendized in the manner that the City Council has to agendize it, and they need to know at least the basics of what you're meeting on.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I've never gone into a closed session with the Planning Commission. I'll ask our city attorney and make sure. That's a very good question. Yeah?
Does it ever occur with a joint session of City Council and Planning?
That is. You'll see it much more when you're going through a specific plan or a general plan update, sometimes a housing element update, those type of items, that there will typically be joint, and they're typically joint workshops before they're going to be joint meetings. Because typically you'll have your Planning Commission will be making a recommendation or approving something, and the City Council will either receive that recommendation and then take action, or they might be the appeal body for a decision that the Planning Commission made. So typically when they meet together, it's just a workshop type of function.
It's never to make a decision.
Yeah, yeah. It can be. There are instances where it could be, but it is rare.
Yeah. And I think the last one we had was with the Alta Irrigation District,
right,
if I remember correctly.
The housing element,
mm-hmm.
It was Planning Commission.
Yeah.
I think it was the same agenda and everything.
But Ron, you and I could conspire to get you to vote for me. that would
be
part of the Brown Act.
Campaign manager.
Told you I'd be in your campaign.
No, what I meant is on an issue coming before our Planning Commission.
Well, that would be an issue.
Yeah,
that would be an issue, right? Wouldn't that be a violation of Brown Act?
If you were the czar of in the middle of all this planning world in California specifically, would you do anything? Would you head us off in a different direction?
That's a loaded question.
Well, I mean, from a real helicopter, not specifically Reedley,
right?
Just
right.
The
from
way
a
things
100,000
go
foot
about
level.
Planning in California and all the hoops you got to go through. Is there anything that you feel like you would do start over and do differently?
You know, I think I'm a very, very big believer in a balance between property rights and community interest, which can be very interesting.
I'm glad you said that.
It can be a very, very interesting and delicate balance to keep all the time. And I think that there have been instances that I've seen at the state level that, in my opinion, tilt that too far to one side or to the other. And that can be, I think, a slippery slope, regardless of which side you happen to be standing on. So for me, well, I don't know if there'd be anything that I would specifically go after and change, but I think for me, what I always want to try to be very mindful of is keeping that balance in the work that, that I'm trying to do, and hopefully being able to bring items before you as the Planning Commission that are represented in that manner. Any other questions?
No, we just want to thank you. I mean, you guys make it easy for us. You know, you guys do all the work. We appreciate you guys. So.
Thank you very much.
He gets paid, we don't.
Right.
That's very true.
That's why I say
extremely
that.
True.
You know, it's all good. All right, well, thank you for that. So we're going to go ahead and talk about future agenda items. We talked about this last time, but just to reiterate everything, no meeting next week.
Correct.
But we're going to go ahead and do a special meeting on the 14th. And that's pretty much a go?
It is, yes.
Okay.
The notices were published in the paper today for two subdivision maps and...
All right, so commissioners most likely plan to be here for about an hour or so.
At least,
we're
going
to have three agenda items we're going to have to go through, so hopefully everyone can make it. And then we go into the new year, the 4th.
That's on the 14th?
Yes.
Correct, yeah.
On the 14th.
No food, though, right, Ella?
No food, no.
I don't think so.
You know, on the record, we just want to say thank you for that.
Can you say, though, until next time?
Can you say that? Freeze him.
What are you talking about? I'm taking him home right now. But with that said, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to move to adjourn.